On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hi, and welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name is Caitlin Durante.
My name is Jamie Loftus.
And we talk about the portrayal of women in movies.
On our podcast that you're listening to.
That's right. Oh my gosh. Oh, that was a little chip.
And a little chip. That was that reminded me of your slurp noise.
My kissing sound. All right. So anyway, we talk about women in movies. We determine if movies pass the Bechdel test, which...
But we do more than that,
We do so too. Much more than that, yeah. But for those who aren't in the know, the Bechdel test is a test that requires that a movie has two female characters in it who have names.
Yeah.
They talk to each other.
Yeah.
And they cannot be talking about men whatsoever.
Let's beta test.
Okay. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Caitlin.
Do you like apple juice?
I could take it or leave it.
And that passes the Bechdel test.
Wow. And what an exciting premise for a movie we'll make one day.
Yeah. I see like a 6 or 7 sequel, a franchise, really.
Fully bankrolled by Mott's. We're sellouts.
Mm-hmm.
Mott's,
right.
You listening? All right.
So we are here with a guest, as we always are.
I usually say friend of the show, but this is kind of an enemy of the show. My personal enemy. None of the show. Of me.
Okay, so personally. Enemy of Jamie.
Yes.
Friend of me. He is a writer, a comedian, and co-host of the Culture Kings podcast that's on the How Stuff Works network, Edgar Montplaisir.
Oingo boingo.
Whoa, coming in hot.
Listen,
he's coming in hot.
Caitlin, thank you so much for having me, Caitlin. You're an old friend of mine. It's been so good.
You're so welcome.
Jamie, I was talking to Caitlin at the time.
It's fine. Thank you for just saying. Just
Jamie and I have a long-running beef because she has outdone me as a guest on the How Stuff Works podcast, the Daily Zeitgeist.
You know?
Well, you don't have to talk shit, Jamie. You don't have to talk shit.
Wow. Should I be like the referee of this?
That means a new outfit. That sounds fun.
Well, anyway, Edgar, we're so happy to have you
here.
And we are talking about Ocean's 11, the 2001 version directed by Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah.
Edgar, when did you first see this movie?
Probably when I was a kid. My dad and my uncles are big fans of the channel networks USA and TNT.
Sure.
So I would watch this movie and many other movies like it.
This
on
is a
those
popular
channels.
TNT rotation movie.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes it is. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. So I'd watch this movie as a kid all the time. I do have a problem with this movie in that I don't know the difference between the three very well.
Okay.
So when watching it, I kept waiting for that Elvis scene, and it never happened because that's not in this one. And I was like, oh, this Elvis scene's going to happen at some point.
Wait, which one is that in?
I think it's in 12. If I'm not
oh,
mistaken.
Oh, really? Because I just also rewatched that, and I don't remember an
is it
Elvis
13?
Scene. It might be 13.
I don't know. There's a scene where there's a bunch of Elvises, and then they all die, and then that's when Bernie Mac dies. Am I crazy?
Yeah, no, that does happen. I think maybe it is 13.
Yeah, I don't think it's 12. Definitely not 11.
All right. Well, the only reason why I remember that scene specifically is because there was one time, this is a terrible story, but I'll tell this part of the story anyways. I was having sex with a person the day of my best friend's funeral. We were in a hotel, and that movie was playing on the TV. And I think as a way to cope with the death of my best friend, I became immediately more focused on the movie. Mm. And I was trying to see whether it was 11, 12, or 13, based on various clues.
Whoa. Interesting.
I believe it was 13. I'm still not sure to this day. But probably the worst sexual experience I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, you can never enjoy it. Like, you trauma bonded.
Speak for yourself, Jamie.
That's true.
I didn't enjoy it at all.
Something very upset. Yeah, I had a really bad breakup. My boyfriend came over to be like, hey, I've been cheating on you. In the middle of a JonBenet documentary I was really excited to watch.
Aww.
And I was so sad.
Was she Katy Perry?
Well, I'll never know how it ends. Was she Katy Perry?
Wait.
No, it was the really bad one that came out that where they smashed a pig's head with a hammer.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They're like, this is what it would have been like. Anyways,
that's a very popular internet conspiracy, is that JonBenet Ramsey grew up to be Katy Perry.
What? I have never heard that before.
That's a good one.
You should look it up.
The other good one is Avril Lavigne, that she was dead and replaced with a body double.
Yeah.
Heard that one.
That's a good one.
Interesting. All right. Well,
anyways.
Speaking of long cons.
Wow.
That's a solid transition.
Best.
Yes.
One of your best.
So much.
Yeah.
Jamie, what's your... What's your history with Ocean's 11?
I know that I thought it was The Big Chill.
Okay.
It's not The Big Chill. Uh-uh. It's actually a different movie. But I have seen it before. My mom made me watch it, and she was horny for various cast members. And so I think we probably watched it on TNT or something. I think I saw it in middle school or something.
Sure, I understand.
No particular attachment to it.
Don Cheadle's Cockney accent really inspired a sexual awakening for me.
Really not a good Cockney accent, though, right? It just sounds really fake.
Yeah.
He's very hot in this movie. Don Cheadle hot in this movie.
Uh-huh.
Don Cheadle hot all the time.
Always.
But his accent, I was like, is that right? I don't know. I was struggling with it.
I bought it.
I have a clarification to make.
Okay.
It's not Ocean's 11. It's a different 2001 Las Vegas heist movie called 3,000 Miles to Graceland.
Oh,
well, that explains the Elvises.
Yeah.
Why have I seen that scene?
I mean, maybe you've seen that movie.
Maybe I have seen that.
And it's not Bernie Mac who dies. It's Bokeem Woodbine.
Oh, sure.
So I would like to apologize to any Bokeem Woodbine fans who are just like, how dare he disrespect him?
They're listening. They're listening.
I get a lot of tweets.
Well, thanks for your clarification.
You're welcome.
The Bokeem community is going to go fucking wild.
I saw this movie in the theater. Ooh. Huge brag. In 2001. At the time, I really liked it. I didn't know what this movie was about or hadn't heard of the original 1960 version. So I had no context for it. And I just went in kind of blind.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, this is the best movie ever. It's so cool. I wrote a paper about it in college. For the longest time, really loved this movie.
Papers about so many. It's because you went to college so much.
It's because I went to so many colleges, including Boston University for a master's degree in screenwriting. I hate to bring it up.
You're extremely humble about that.
But yeah, I really enjoy this movie, but I haven't rewatched it in quite a few years. So I am excited to talk about it.
It's interesting. We have, for some reason, covered a lot of movies that came out in the year 2001
mm-hmm.
on this podcast, because every time you talk about something that happens in 2001, you have to figure out what part of 2001 it came out in.
And if it was pre or post Shrek.
Exactly. That is, of course, the major event of 2001.
Yeah.
Shrek was the last knell of innocence mm-hmm. that we, because that was July. And then this came out in December, which is just worth saying, because when you say 2001, you want to know. And also it 9/11, unfortunately, informed all media consumption habits forever after that.
That's so interesting that it came out post 9/11, because it's a movie chock full of explosives.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I was wondering that I had to stop it in the middle to be like, but it did so well. The movie was super successful.
It was the highest grossing film in 2001, right?
Right, yeah. And I wonder why this movie did so well. And
it's an all-star cast. It was
everyone,
tons of A-listers in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons we're doing this movie is because Ocean's 8 is coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you can only have 8 because there's only 8 actresses total.
Total.
So
in the world.
Unfortunately, there aren't 11 actresses, so they can only have 8.
Well, my guess is that they're planning this as a trilogy. So they're going to do Oceans 8, 9, and 10. And then there's already 11, 12, and 13. And then they're going to bring it back around with a co-ed cast, is my guess, for 14, 15, and 16.
Oh.
But they're going to have to cut out so many people. I mean, I guess some of them are dead, so they don't have to worry about that. But
Or they just totally recast it altogether.
Or they can just stop. I'm so sick of franchises. I'm tired. I'm tired.
What?
The extended Ocean's 11 universe?
And then it's going to be, where do we leave off? It was 14, 15, 16. Then it's going to be 17, 18, and 19 comprised entirely of non-binary, gender fluid, gender queer people.
Can they just make a movie? Why does it have to be in the Danny
Ocean
Oceans universe? Oh, okay. So let's get into the movie. But I just have to say that everyone hates Geely, right?
Mm.
But Danny Ocean is a worse name for a protagonist than Larry Geely. And I will die on that hill. I couldn't. I was like, when he was like, my name's Daniel Ocean. I was like, this is a fucking dumb name. A bad name.
I disagree. I think Larry.
Do you like this movie, Caitlin, and Honest?
I really do.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm surprised by this.
because it's not good and you thought I had better taste?
I came in here being like, man, they're going to really dislike this movie. But then I'm surprised to see that I'm more like with Jamie being like, yo, this movie is kind of wild in some ways. And you're like, you're defending this movie earnestly.
Well, here's the thing. I love a good heist movie. And this is a fun romp. This is a romp, and I love a good romp. And
hey, all Caitlin's Tinder matches, take note.
Yeah,
this woman loves a romp. Good She's romp. Addicted to a romp.
Put it on her gravestone.
Daniel Ocean, worse name than Larry Gili. Sound off. Okay. Fill my mentions.
Look,
Larry Gili is a fun name.
It's a terrible name.
It's so bad in that movie.
It's a very bad name.
Larry Gili rhymes with really terrible line.
Okay, I'll do the recap.
Yeah, let's do it.
So, Danny Ocean, best name in Hollywood, best name of a
Larry
character
Gili,
ever.
Right? I'm just going to keep mixing him up with Gili.
Played by George Clooney. He's released from prison. Mm-hmm. He was there because he's a con man. He's a thief. Yeah.
He was bad, but he was handsome.
He was handsome. So they're like, here, you can be in prison for 4 years and we'll just let you go.
He's handsome.
And white privilege. So he's like, I have an idea. And he gets a gang together to rob 3 casinos in Las Vegas. Ever heard of it? And they're all owned by Terry Benedict. So
that is a great name. Hate Danny Ocean, love Terry Benedict.
I don't know. I had an issue with his name being Terry Benedict. Really? I was like, yeah, I was just like, how'd he get that name?
He sounds like a breakfast. I love him. Yeah. Give me the Terry Benedict. I wish my 2 favorite character names for men, Dan Manchin, I think is a better name than Danny Ocean. Dan Manchin. And then Mike Randma.
What's that from?
You just say it. Say it.
Mike Randma?
Mike Grandma.
Yeah, it sounds like.
My grandma.
Just a fun bit.
What an innocent, what an innocent joke, Jamie. Truly an innocent joke.
I'm going to edit that out. Okay.
Wow. Okay.
So Danny's getting his gang together. They form a plan. They're like, we got to get past all this security. We got to get inside the vault. Then we have to get back outside the vault with all this money. They have to hack into the mainframe. And everyone has this like certain specialty. There's 11 of them total. Get it? That's the name of the movie. Mm-hmm. Everyone's playing a few different roles in this whole heist thing. And
people have frosty tips, others don't.
Such as Rusty Ryan, played by Brad Pitt. Mm-hmm. He and Danny are bros. They are BFFs. Mm-hmm. But he figures out that the reason that Danny Ocean is going after these 3 casinos and Terry Benedict is because Terry Benedict is dating Danny Ocean's ex-wife, Tess.
She's fully lost in the Benedict sauce. She loves it.
She orders him for breakfast every day.
She's addicted to Benedict. She's Benedicted.
Oh, God. So,
I'm on Terry's team. No, I'm kidding. He's bad.
He's real bad. Okay, so then Rusty's like, Danny, what are you doing? Bros before hoes. And Danny's like, no, this isn't going to affect the plan. And then they do the heist. There's like some twists and turns. Mostly everything goes according to plan and they get the money. And then at the end, Tess basically learns that Terry Benedict is a capitalist who loves capitalism.
Wait, the casino owner and bad more. Capitalist? Come on.
He loves his money more than he loves women. So Tess leaves him to go back to Danny. And then they all live happily ever after.
It's complicated because I love money more than men. So in that way, I can connect with Terry Benedict's point of view.
Yeah.
I'm a Benedict apologist.
So not surprisingly, there is only one female character in this movie.
The entire movie.
The entire. There, I made a list of all the women with speaking roles, and I think it's only 4 of them that we see on screen, and then a couple disembodied female voices at the very beginning.
And a lot of disembodied female body parts.
That are not given voices.
And I would, with some exceptions, probably extend this criticism to like most movies that take place in Las Vegas, mm-hmm. of like using women as set dressing in a major way. Like there's literally the first big card game in this movie, you can just see like legs.
Yeah.
In a window. Like, mm-hmm. but just legs. One woman is allowed to be playing cards.
But she can't say much. You know, she doesn't get any
And we, I don't know if we ever learn her name. I think her name is Holly.
The woman playing cards?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. She's a celebrity. Well,
yeah, who
I don't
is
mean
that?
To explain, but like she's like
How
a...
How dare you?
She's a celebrity, and I think she's the lead from Charmed. And the idea is that Brad Pitt's character now is teaching famous people how to play cards. So she's one of the famous people playing cards. But again, I would put an asterisk on that famous because not a single one of the people playing cards at that table are relevant anymore.
Anymore, no. Well, the ones that I
guess Topher Grace was like the closest one.
Yeah, I love how they kept calling Topher. And Josh.
Joshua Jackson.
Yeah, I was
and
like,
then
holy shit.
Shane West. Weird. And then I didn't recognize any of the other people, so I didn't.
She's the lead from Charmed. Hold okay. on,
wait,
let me
is
look
it, not Shannon Daugherty, Holly Marie Combs?
Let's see.
Holly Marie Combs of one of my favorite shows, Pretty Little Liars.
Oh.
I think that, I guess that could have, but then she just, she wasn't allowed to talk very much. That's
she basically just says call over and over again because she's playing poker. So
it was her.
Okay, it is her. Okay.
Yeah.
She is one of the four women who we see on screen with a speaking role, but she's only in the movie for a couple scenes and then we never see her again. Another one is a blackjack dealer in the very beginning that Danny Ocean talks to for maybe 30 seconds.
That's frustrating too because the first like couple minutes of the movie, you see there's like a few female characters. One of the people interviewing Danny when he is like getting out of jail.
His parole hearing, yeah.
Yeah, like you can tell like it's a female voice, but you're just looking at George Clooney the whole time.
Yeah.
And then the blackjack scene, you hear the voice. I think you see her once in like one shot, and then you just look at George Clooney the whole time. And then once Bernie Mac's on screen, then you cut back and forth. But for the first couple women who could appear on screen, they just elect to be like, or we could just look at George Clooney.
Right.
They're like, we don't need to see
women. Well, the fans paid to see George Clooney, and damn it,
they
didn't pay to see this blackjack dealer.
Everyone saved up their hard-earned Clooney bucks.
Clooney cash.
When I was hitting it hard at that gas station in 2001, I wasn't saving my money to see some blackjack dealer. I was saving my Clooney bucks for some Clooney.
My Clooney bucks. Do you guys accept Clooney cards here?
Fresh off of that Batman and Robin fame.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So that's half of the characters already women who we immediately cut away from and then don't see again. Another one is named Charmaine. She's a stripper who plays a very, very small role in helping them get an access card that they need to like hack into the mainframe.
And she's also very important because she is, to my knowledge, the first mother and daughter stripper pair I've ever heard of.
You haven't met me and my mom until... Go to the Foxy Lady in Brockton, Massachusetts.
Yeah. When I heard that joke, I was like, this is such a weird joke to be making. It was like, say hi to my mom.
Right. Well, I want to talk about that conversation a little bit later. But so the main female character is Tess, played by Julia Roberts. We do not see her on screen until 44 minutes into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And when she does come on screen, Matt Damon's all like, oh, this is the best part of my day. And then we cut to Julia Roberts wearing like a foxy red outfit. There's like sexy music playing and she's like walking down the stairs in slow motion. Like very,
it's
like very male gaze. Like, ooh, look at this foxy lady.
Mm-hmm.
And then we learn that basically the plot of the movie is that Danny Ocean is targeting these three casinos because Terry Benedict stole his woman and he wants to win her back because he sees this woman as something he can steal just like any other that he wants to pull.
Classic.
I see romance in this. I don't know. And I don't know. I truly do see romance in this.
It is an interesting inversion of the plot of so many movies, which is like, I'm going to trick her into loving me again. Like the little, George Clooney's rubbing his little paws together. He's got a big
like
idea.
A raccoon, a raccoony,
a little.
Oh boy,
he's like gonna...
like a raccoon, but
yes, no, I understood the.
Sorry,
I understood
let me
the
keep
plot.
Explaining.
He's gonna out Benedict Terry at his own game,
right?
And they're. I forgot that was the setup of the movie. I just remembered that they were stealing stuff. I forgot that it was like.
and then she'll have to marry me. Like, no, she won't.
Right.
What are you talking
about? So, but, like,
okay, that's a big romantic. I mean,
gesture.
Like, it's a big romantic gesture.
It's a wide swing. It's a wide swing.
You could look at it that way. You could also look at it in that he basically views her as property. Because, well, I mean, we don't
know how
necessarily Danny Ocean feels about the situation, but I think it's pretty clear that the movie is coming from a standpoint where she's essentially a plot device, because it doesn't really make any sense that she is with Terry Benedict, but it's convenient for the story because then that motivates Danny Ocean to pull this heist.
Yes.
Because we, as we see in so many movies, we don't necessarily understand why Tess and Terry Benedict are together, because they don't seem that compatible, because Tess is not actually a fully realized, developed character.
Mm.
She's with him because it serves the story,
mm-hmm.
and it's convenient for the plot.
And Tess is a really poor, like, underwritten character where a lot of, like, the tropes they lean into, and every character in this movie is underwritten, maybe with the exception of Danny.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's the only character that you were like, okay, I think I fully get where this guy's coming from, even though I don't agree with it, but whatever. But there's just, like, too many people in this movie in general where 9 out of the 11 men blend together for me. I'm like, who? There, why would you put Matt Damon and Brad Pitt? Like, they have the same face. It's confusing. But, like, Tess Ocean, classic. We got to give this woman a job. She's an art curator. Like, that's so many movies. Or, like, she runs, you know, she, like, because I wonder why that's, like, a classic, like, more of, like, a rom-com trope of, like, oh, she's does business, but, like, girl business, you know?
Yeah.
Like, not it's not too threatening. If she runs a gallery.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this, but women can only be museum curators, or they work at a magazine in New York City, or they own a bakery, or they're a wedding planner.
I love when they're journalists, but then they get a little too into the story.
Mm.
And then the lines blur and there's a kiss.
Those are all good jobs, guys.
Those are all
high-paying jobs, okay?
They're good. I just don't know.
5 figures a year.
It's true. They have gorgeous apartments all the time.
Yeah, listen, okay? I mean, she was dating a casino mogul, you know? I mean,
she
that's a good place to be.
The Terry Benedict.
They say that he's worth nearly $1 billion, so.
Is that in USDs or Benedict bucks?
That's in Clooney cash.
I did want to say that, like, I found it a little bit interesting that, like, a trope that I hate in movies is that, like, the person that she's seeing is, like, a bad person. Like, I've always hated that in movies,
mm-hmm.
because it's just, like, they broke up with you originally because you were a douche. Or, like, you know, like, I don't like the idea of, like, you can steal someone away from their partner. It may be based on my own insecurities of that happening to me
sure.
one day. But, like, I was, like, kind of rooting for it to happen because I was like, yo, you know, this Terry Benedict dude's kind of a douchebag.
Oh, sure. I mean, we don't like him as the audience, of course.
Yeah.
Right. But like, the Terry Benedict character being so flat out, like, cartoon villainy,
mm-hmm.
mustache twisty evil,
mm-hmm.
I feel like the reason that's done is because Danny is not a good guy. And so, you know,
you need someone worse.
Exactly. Like, you have to make someone worse. And the rules of this cinematic universe is girl has to be with someone. So
right.
hopefully the one that is more handsome and less bad. Like, and that's just sort of what the rules of engagement are. There's never a moment in the movie where it's like, oh, she's gonna strike out, you know,
open up her own museum. But no, yeah, exactly. So we find out at the end that Danny has set it up so that she will have a choice, but the choice is to pick between two men. So it's either, do you want this ex-con criminal who steals and lies about it, or do you want this capitalist who treats
Terry
you
Benedict.
Poorly and doesn't want to kiss you in public? Which, like, what was that all about?
I mean, also, it's like, maybe Terry Benedict is, like, shy.
Maybe he doesn't
PDA
like
guy.
PDA.
In yeah, defense of Terry Benedict. Not all people like PDA makes some people uncomfortable.
Who knows? Basically, he is a bad guy, and it doesn't make any sense that she would be with him. But yeah, so the movie sets it up so that she is given a choice, but her only two options are to be with one guy or different guy. And that's the thing with so many movies. They're like, oh, do you want to be with the vampire or the werewolf? Do you want to be with the boy who bakes cakes or the boy who calls you catnip?
I just see good choices here. I'm yeah. so stuck, guys. I'm truly, you know, I truly said, Edgar, come on this podcast with an open mind. And I did. And all I'm hearing are good choices. You know, like I think about Juno in the very, very good movie Juno, where she had to pick between a high school senior or a married Jason Bateman. And like, that's a good place for a pregnant underage girl.
Good choice. Good choice. Yeah. Feminist icon, Jason Bateman. Really. Ally to all.
The bottom line is that this movie, like so many movies, if they have a female character, it's usually just one of them, and the movie treats them like they're a prize to be won, to Absolutely. Borrow a phrase from Aladdin, where Jasmine says, I am not a prize to be won.
But she sort of is.
But she sort of is.
Was, yeah.
And is like so many movies. But no time is spent developing her character. If she is on screen, she's usually like... seems mean and yelly and like naggy.
I wonder how much, like, okay, if we did screen time, how much Julia Roberts is on screen versus how much time of this movie is used with long shots of a large pack of men walking down the hall ominously. Like, it has to be three times longer.
Yeah.
Men walking down halls. This movie cut out all the men walking down all the halls. 20 minutes long. A short film. A short film at best. But there's just, we see this pack, and I was like, ooh, this is scary.
There might be more security camera footage than Julia Roberts' screen time.
Honestly, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, they're...
Casey Affleck, problematic Casey Affleck, probably has more screen time.
Casey Affleck.
Right.
God. This movie didn't... And I still love a heist movie, and I hope that, like... I hope Ocean's 8 like knocks it out of the park and it's a fun heist movie that you don't have to feel shitty watching.
Mm-hmm.
Because heist movies can be so fun. But, I mean, obviously with Ocean's 11, they're adapting it from an even more problematic version that's like
Has
a
anyone seen that one
movie.
From 1960?
I have not.
I've seen it once a long time ago.
Okay.
And, like,
I haven't seen it, so yeah. But TMZ. Like, so basically, yeah, we've got the all-female reboot coming out.
Yeah.
Ocean's 11 from 2001 is already a reboot, and it's like 40 years later, but Mr. Hollywood was like, let's make an Ocean's 11 reboot, but we're still going to keep it all men. So it took another almost 20 years later for them to be like, actually, what if women this time?
Yeah, Frank Sinatra plays Danny Ocean,
otherwise
known as Larry Geely, in the original version. And I don't remember how much is changed from that version to this. I'm assuming that some changes are made, and hopefully this movie
There's
treats.
Two black guys.
Right. They yeah, and the first time it's just Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just so dumb cuz all 11 dudes, like 9 of them are so criminally underwritten that literally any of them could be women because they're not even written as like toxic male character. They're just written as like nothing.
Right.
It would be so easy to have. And I'm kind of surprised that by 2001, they weren't doing like a wink, wink, even this is like setting the bar so low, but like you can't even tokenize a woman.
Right.
In this part of like, there were so many opportunities where it was like, oh, this would be if there were one woman on the team where she would prove her competence and all the guys would be like, whoa. Love that scene when that
Well,
happens
that sort of happens in Ocean's 12. I didn't watch Ocean's 13, so I can't totally remember who the extra person
Julia
is in
Roberts
that.
Becomes 12.
And yeah, so Tessa's character is introduced as one of the 12 in the sequel. That movie is, I would say, even worse than this one because even
what
though
year
there
did
are
that
a few,
come out?
I think that was 2004.
See, and that to me, I would like to applaud Steven Soderbergh because he said, you know what, just wait 3 years. And I get you guys' frustration and you guys' anger of your lack of representation, but like progress does take time. And to get Julia Roberts in there 3 years later, I mean,
that's pretty impressive.
Pretty stunning turnaround.
Yeah.
For the Soderbergh.
Well, there's even a couple more female characters in that one because Catherine Zeta Jones is introduced. We meet someone's mom eventually. But so Tess becomes one of the 12, one of the people pulling off the heist. But her skill, the thing that she contributes to the heist, like the only thing that she has to offer is her physical resemblance to another woman.
Oh, no.
So it's not as though she has like this great skill, like, you know, because everyone, like Don Cheadle's good at like explosives. There's a surveillance guy. There's Yen who does like all the like fitting into tight spaces.
Which isn't that glamorous of a job, let's be honest.
True. It seems very claustrophobic. but they all have like a distinct specialty, whereas, yeah, Tess was just like, oh, you look like another woman, so you're going to help us out. And also, we're going to make you seem pregnant. So
they make her seem, well, I haven't seen this movie in a long time.
Yeah. Jesus, and then the plot of that movie is basically just one big dick measuring contest.
At least Ocean's 11 has the decency to not even really mention women one time. It was interesting watching, and I don't even know what this indicates about the movie or this point in time at all, but, you know, you keep seeing, obviously, these scenes with, like, 11 guys talking to each other. And I was like, oh, they're going to say something fucked up. It's going to be gross. It's going to be whatever. But they don't. They really just talk about the heist. That's all they talk about. Women don't come up in this movie really ever, which is weird because it's the thrust and the reason they're doing it is because George Clooney want him wife back.
Mm-hmm.
But the dialogue of the movie largely, like, you'd never know women existed.
I'm sure. Well, that's because we don't. And I don't know if you guys have ever hung out with 10 or 11 men. But it's something I do every other day. And we don't talk about women in those times. We usually are talking about heist and,
sure.
You know, different casinos that we want to hit.
any group of 10 anytime, plus men.
Listen, if you see 10 or 11 men together, they're probably planning a heist or hoping that a woman who looks like another woman comes by.
Yeah. Right, just to help out the team. You know, Julia Roberts, real guy's gal in Ocean's 12.
Well, yeah. In Ocean's 11, whenever they are talking about a woman, it's usually Brad Pitt confronting George Clooney, basically being like, you're not doing this for Tess, are you? Or you're just doing this because you're also a capitalist and you want a bunch of money, right? Basically, right. Like, Brad Pitt sees her as a complication. Mm. Like, she's poised as this thing that's potentially going to fuck up their plan.
Well, and I do agree that one should not steal from casinos for the purpose of tricking Julia Roberts.
Yes. Wow,
I see
hot
Brad
tank.
Pitt's point there.
Yeah.
but I think there is like an interesting, like that's made another way that the Tess character is like used by the movie and then never developed. Because it's fine for characters to have specific reasons to be in the movie, but
sure.
You also have to write it. And they forgot. They slipped. But the fact that like George Clooney displaying emotion or attachment to anyone is viewed as this massive liability for the group.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I wanted to say in regards to Tess is that at the end, whenever she makes her choice, the very important choice that the movie presents her with, where she only has two options to pick one man or a different man and not, oh, maybe I should leave these men all together and move to somewhere else.
Do
and
what?
Maybe I'll pursue.
maybe I'll go and date someone who doesn't have a silly last name.
Or maybe I'm going to go back to school and study art history and open up my own museum. Anyway,
I don't know.
Basically,
someone should tell her what's going to happen to the economy in 7 years.
She's basically made to look stupid at the end, where whenever she is like, oh my God, I didn't know what you were doing, Danny. And he was like, well, I did, so it's fine. So the whole movie, she's
a genius. When, I am smart. Yeah, you are my wife again.
When she's on screen, she's like yelling and seems really mean. And then she makes her choice to go back with Danny. And then she's like, oh, wow, what a stupid mistake I made dating Terry Benedict. I should have been with you all along, Danny.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's just very frustrating the way her character is poised.
I want to talk about their first conversation together, Danny and Tess, because he is looking for her. She does not want to see him. And expresses that several times in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
This is like another, it's weird. There's like a bunch of rom-com tropes inside of this heist movie where the guy shows up. He is not welcome. That is stated. She says, don't sit down. Go away. Like there's a bunch of different indicators that she doesn't. Because Terry fucking Benedict is on the way. A god among men is blazing down the hall. You know, but like she doesn't want him to be there. And him staying there is like, oh, what a, you little devil, you. Like, it's not made to seem inappropriate. It's just like George Clooney clooning the fuck out. And it's like, no, but she actually wants him to stay, which is like implying that subtext in an underwritten female character happens all the time. And it's like super damaging and bad.
You're for sure.
Get out of there, Clune.
Get out.
I just wish that Clune was like, it's 2001, Match.com was around. He's George Clooney.
You can't, but listen, okay. You can't gather up your boys for just some Match.com like person. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's true.
It's got to be somebody special.
I'm just saying he should absolutely steal from Terry Benedict.
1,000%.
Wild out. But like, but also have an interior life and have your Match.com profile, and that's a separate thing. don't mix work and pledge.
Have you ever had unrequited love before?
No, I've only been loved by who I want all the time my whole life.
I've only had unrequited love in my life.
Okay.
And I can tell you that there are so many things I've done that have never resulted in the woman. And to see this work out was, you know, very, very comforting.
Like, encouraging continued in, like, not good behavior.
I didn't say that. I wanted to be very clear that I'm not telling young men out there to do anything. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm telling most young men out there, don't do anything, please.
Stay very still.
Yeah, never leave your home.
Bad things happen when you do things. But I want to be, like, it feels good to see a man win for once. You know what I mean?
It's
like,
win for once.
Yeah.
And even better, see 11 men win.
Well, Jesus. I mean, I had to contain myself while watching this movie. It was so, like, satisfying.
Yeah. I was edging personally.
I mean, there's a reason.
11 men win at once.
I know. What groundbreaking cinema to watch a group of men win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason I like this movie. And I still like this movie.
Are you sure?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I was entertained while I was rewatching it. Yeah. I don't know. It's just the fact that he does this whole thing to basically prove his masculinity over another man. He's like, I have to, like, make sure that my ex-wife, who doesn't love me anymore because she filed for a divorce, I have to prove to her that I'm more of a man than this new man that she has chosen for whatever reason, and that I'm better than him. So, I mean,
so much of his behavior is, like, not, like, that when someone slips her a phone, terrifying behavior, and then calls, and like, and then the fact that it's one of his big romantic gesture moments is like, I've been secretly taping your new boyfriend Terry Benedict. Like, if you apply this to real life, you're like, holy shit, this is, if your ex comes out of the woodwork to be like, actually, your new boyfriend's not a good guy, I know, because I've been secretly surveilling him for weeks. And
well, then I would ask you, Jamie and Caitlin, what would you propose us to do? What would you say that Danny Ocean should approach Tess and say, hey, look, I've done really bad things in the past. I've been a jerk. I manipulated you. I lied to you. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry. I'm not expecting anything in return for this apology. I'm just saying that. Is that what you're proposing he should do?
You're right. That sounds silly. That sounds dumb.
Because, I mean, that sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, and if she says, if she is open to the idea of maybe rekindling a thing, like a romance, there probably doesn't need to be a huge, grand gesture. Maybe he just needs to pay attention to her and cater to her emotional needs.
Well, I'd counter that, Caitlin, by saying every piece of media I've seen since I was born tells me otherwise.
Then you're right. You should do what media tells you to do, because it's always right.
And then part of the reason she didn't want to be with him is because he went to jail for, like, stealing.
Stealing and then lied
and
about
then he's
it.
Like,
he lied to her.
Right. And then he wins her back by, once again, stealing and lying to her. And then it's like, but this time, nothing. It's exact. The only difference is he does not get fully caught. Like, he pulls it off.
Well, mm-hmm.
That's the only difference.
We all know that things are only bad when you get caught.
That is true. There, but the lesson there of, like, no, women want you to keep doing exactly what you were doing, but just be the best at doing it. And it's like the terrible behavior that caused her to, you know, he went to jail, and then I don't know if they broke up before he went to jail or if they broke up because he went to jail. I don't know if that's explicitly stated.
He says that he received the divorce papers the last day he was inside.
Oh, okay.
So they were technically married for a while, for the most of the time he was in jail, which I think we're led to believe is a few years.
Right. And it sounds like she wasn't, like, visiting him.
Right.
But, like, just setting that precedent of, like, do the exact same thing, but as long as you get away with it, she'll love you. Like, it's just...
Yeah, it's a dangerous message to send.
It rules.
It rules, yes.
I'm in love with criminals.
Does anyone have any other final thoughts about the movie?
It's weird. There's really just Tess to talk about. Mm-hmm. This movie largely ignores women in a way that's so blatant, I find it almost adorable. Where it's like, we've got 11 men in every scene and women don't exist. Like, it's just very, very heisty hive mind. I think this movie could have done with more hacking sequences. I would have loved to see more hallway walks.
Oh, yeah.
I would have loved to see more emotional repression. And I think Alfred Molina would have been a great Terry Benedict.
Oh, sure. See, I think there should have been more Danny Ocean standing in front of Trump Plaza.
I thought they also should have cast,
you know, between like Casey Affleck and then like Matt Damon saying tone deaf stuff all the time. I think they really could have gotten more problematic men in there.
Yeah. And the fact that we get shout out to Trump, very pro casino, pro gambling movie. I loved that we were seeing women's legs, but never their faces or hear their voices and not know if it was attached to a body at all. Just the mystique, the feminine mystique surrounding yes. this movie. Really, I think it's fair to assume, and I'll say it, Ocean's 11, a feminist text.
Definitely, 100%.
Mm-hmm. One other thing I wanted to say, just in regards to Steven Soderbergh, I do think it's interesting that he goes on to direct movies that are far more progressive and far more sex positive. He directed Magic Mike.
Oh, yeah.
Girlfriend Experience.
And the So it's like it's interesting and encouraging to see that the same director who could direct this competent but ignoring basically everything kind of movie can go on to make better, more conscious, and just like generally those two. I like those two movies way better in general.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's good. Is Steven Soderbergh a sex criminal?
Not that I have heard, but it's also hard to keep track of them all because there are so many. One last thing that I wanted to say, this is very important, is that inside of the briefcase that ends up in the vault in the movie Ocean's 11, mm-hmm. inside is basically four green Heart of the Oceans from Titanic.
Ooh, true.
They're like little green jewels. And also, Danny's last name is Ocean, so his heart could technically be called
of the
Heart
ocean?
Of the Ocean.
I don't know how you guys can walk away from this movie heart? Just completely swooned. It's so confusing to me.
It's so good.
Does what it pass you? The Bechdel test?
No.
Oh, not no. even close. But, okay, so I wanted to call back to that conversation that Brad Pitt is having with that character Charmaine, because the closest thing this movie has to women interacting with each other is Rusty saying to Charmaine, say hi to your mom for me. So he's encouraging her to talk to another woman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But she responds and says, tell her yourself, she'll be on stage in 5 minutes. So she's like, I don't want to talk to another woman. That you can't happen in this movie. You talk to her.
That said, Brad Pitt. I want to see that movie.
Ooh, one of those, yeah.
Like, that's the movie that is more interesting than the one I'm watching.
All right, let's rate the movie based on our nipple scale, based on its portrayal of women, 0 to 5 nipples. I mean, gosh,
it's confusing.
Zero nipples? Like, the one woman who has any significant screen time, which is still hardly any, and who has any sort of bearing on the story, is basically just a plot device, a prize to be won.
Totally.
She's given no character development. Yeah, she's really just there to serve as motivation for one of the male characters and to make him seem more complex and more sympathetic. So, yeah, I have to give it a 0 nip rating, even though I do enjoy this movie.
I almost want to say, like, not applicable, because women are just not in this movie or mentioned in this movie, which I don't think we've ever had a movie quite like this, where usually if we give something zero nipples, it's like it treats women terribly. This movie doesn't treat women like anything. They don't exist in this world,
right,
except for Julia Roberts, who is, you know, a prop.
Mm-hmm.
I would give this movie 5 nipples because I think that a woman could watch this movie. And if there's a woman out there who's just like, you know, I'm in this relationship with this person that I'm not sure I like, or I have this career that I'm stuck in, that they can know there's a man out there who's been purposefully keeping her in the dark and, you know, manipulating her and stuff like that, but with good intention, and that it's all going to work out in the end.
We're all looking for our Terry Benedict. I mean, I'm looking for my Terry Benedict, and I hope that he's listening right now.
Well, mm-hmm. I'll do you one better and hope that you get a Danny Ocean.
What? I don't want a Danny Ocean. Give me
Terry.
I don't
know if you've been listening, but it's not about what you want.
I'm an art gallery. I'm an art curator. I'm an art. I'm an art. Please marry me. That's all.
Well, Edgar, thank you so much for being here.
It was my pleasure.
Where can we find you on the web?
You can find me on Instagram at Awfulgram, on Twitter at Edgar Maupassier, on the Culture Kings podcast on How Stuff Works, and I got this project coming out soon called Sad Boy Edgar. Make sure to check that out.
Ooh, fun.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
And you can follow us on social media at Bechdelcast. You can rate and review us on iTunes. You can go to our website where you can buy our merch. And also sign up for our Patreon and check out Ocean's 8 if you want. We didn't really talk about, if you want more, well, speaking of our Patreon, if you want more of a take on female reboots and whether or not they are useful at all, mm-hmm. check out our Ghostbusters episode, the 2016 all-female reboot episode of that, only on our Patreon for more discussion on the all-female reboot concept.
We get into it.
And otherwise, Jamie, I just want you to know that I would never steal $160 million from you.
Thank you so much. I aspire to be your Terry Bennett. I will betray you.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Bye.